Me, Ryan Hirschhorn, your host of the e-commerce mindset podcast. And I just finished an interview with Megan Harmon talking all about brand protection, how to deal with listing hijackers, how to prevent these problems in advance before they even become a listing hijacker. It's not a topic that I think you hear a lot about on social media, etc., people talking about brand protection. And so I wanted to kind of bring it to the forefront because it's something a lot of brands, as they grow and as they get into retail, really care about. So I think you'll want to hear the podcast with Megan. And as always, the podcast is sponsored by incrementumdigital.com. We are the growth engine for your brand. Visit us at incrementumdigital.com, where we can offer you a free audit to uncover all the growth opportunities your brand has. Enjoy this podcast interview with Megan. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. We have with us Megan Harmon, managing partner with Thorncrest, which is a brand protection agency. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad that you invited me over. I know we've had an opportunity to work together a little bit, but it's nice to actually have a chance to chat and maybe to dive a little bit deeper.
Yes. And I think most of the guests that I have on my podcast, actually, I often get pitched a lot of guests from these podcasts. There's these services and I always ignore them. Sure. And the guests that come on the show are ones that come on organically. I wasn't planning on doing an episode on brand protection, but
you came
recommended from a friend. And when I had a client that needed help with brand protection, and since then we had another client that needed help with brand protection, and you came highly recommended. And so I thought it was be good to talk about this topic, because I think it's something brands need help with, but you don't often hear a lot of brands talking about. So I guess let's start with the basics of what is brand protection.
Broad sweeping question, but I certainly can dive in a little bit. And so brand protection in its basic form is trademark and IP protection, right? So enforcing on trademarks, enforcing on patents, assisting with additional trademarks, assisting with additional patents, contract work, et cetera, right? So we can continue going on and on. At the very high level, it is basically protecting your brand name and your product from being misused by others, protecting your baby, if you will, right? And everything that you've worked for. But deeper than that is where we go. So we certainly advise on the trademark side and on the IP side as well, patent, and enforce on that as well. But I think the bigger, what we do more of is actually managing and help manage kind of policing e-commerce is really what our specialty is, so that brands can focus on the growth versus trying to sell and fix the back end at the same time. It pulls away from that drive forward. So it, in its simplest form, absolutely protecting trademark, enforcing trademark, enforcing and protecting your IP. In a broader sweeping sense, it's looking and helping with contracts, drafting MAP agreements, strengthening warranty language, helping with questions about partnerships, new partnerships, reviewing retail agreements. If you want to go omni-channel, it is much more broad sweeping than that, because frankly, the bigger the company goes, which is where some of the clients that you and I have shared are omni-channel, or larger omni-channel clients. And that's the bigger they grow, the bigger the problem becomes, because everyone wants a little piece of that pie. And so You start finding people that pop up out of nowhere that are using your name to attract attention, to market, to do whatever they can do to hopefully one day be on your playing field.
Yeah, I had a couple of interesting cases recently. One had one of our clients who suddenly, he has a product that sells for $25, and suddenly Amazon suppressed their listing because of a lower price elsewhere. He sells on Walmart too. Couldn't find a lower price anywhere. He finally ended up hunting down on Mercari somebody listing his product for $9.99. He ordered the product. It was a counterfeit product. And it took him some time to hunt that down and eventually submit to Mercari that it was counterfeit, was able to get it taken care of and the listing back up with Amazon, but it cost him 10 days of sales or whatever until he figured it out. And during, this was in the summer, and during the summer, he's got a backyard splash toy that's like between 1 and 10 in all of Toys and Games on Amazon. So it's like thousands and thousands of dollars in sales every single day. So I imagine this is something part of what you're dealing with
all the time, unfortunately. And that is, so when we work with a brand, we look at internet wide, but what I always say, the easiest analogy is that Amazon's the tip of the iceberg. It is absolutely the most visible. Right. So everyone's going and researching on Amazon. You're paying hyper attention to your ASINs on Amazon. But if you're seeing a problem on Amazon, there's much bigger problems underneath. And so we look at some of the Chinese websites that do phishing. Mm-hmm. So they'll put your name on there, say that this is a product. You'll get a seller who's, oh, whatever, X, Y, and Z bath toy or summer toy does really well. I'm going to buy it in bulk at this super cheap price. They get it. They think it's brand name X.
Right.
But it's not, right? This phishing site just had their brand name there, trying to market it to get that sale, but they're going to market it as brand name X as well. So the consumer is going to get an inferior product. They're going to lower the price. The listing may be suppressed. Right. We even say this with big box retail too. So it's Mercari's one, certainly there's tons more. And we look at all of those, but even if you're also in retail, beyond just your ASIN being suppressed and what that could do to your business. We had a brand whose ASIN was suppressed because they had a Prime Day special for the particular product. And so they were doing a Prime Day promo, and Amazon takes the last 6 months and takes that as the MSRP, and then you want to make margin whole off of that.
Right.
And you're entered into Prime Day. A week before Prime Day happened, one of their retailers, legitimate retailer, decided to discount the product to get onto the Prime Day bandwagon, if you will, but they did it too early. It flagged in Amazon's system. Amazon removed the Prime Day, even though they were a vendor central account, shipped in for Prime Day goods.
Wow.
Amazon removed their Prime Day special, suppressed their listing throughout all of Prime Day. And the only reason why this happened, so hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars lost. And this one retailer had 35 units left over. And all it took was a phone call. And it was really just that simple, but they didn't catch it for 3 days. And it was too late. It basically had reset that MSRP. They couldn't match the price that Amazon needed. So yeah, it absolutely happens all the time. And it's challenging, obviously, for the brand, but if you're monitoring it, I think that's something that we always say, brand protection tends to be a reactive program that people look for because they just lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And like, well, we're never going to do that again. It's a lot cheaper if you're preventative about it. It's a lot cheaper if you look at it in the long run. It's almost like getting insurance, right? And not quite the same level, but you go and you've got a broken arm, you go to the doctor and you didn't have insurance. You're never going to not have insurance again.
Right. Yeah. So Amazon monitors online pricing, but they also monitor in-store retail pricing.
They do.
Yeah. Especially like on big box, like Walmart and other.
Yeah. And even smaller retail too. Regional retailers, they monitor online pricing. They also do price comps for in-store. So we've worked with quite a few grocery clients and supplements too that do bundles on Amazon, but do singles in store. Mm. If Amazon finds a similar product during their price competitive sweep, basically, or whatever you want to call that, they basically, if their bundle online is more costly than a single times three or times two or times six, they will suppress it until that pricing makes sense. We see that happen a lot in the grocery segment is probably the biggest issue that we find. And it's very challenging because what we basically that's resetting with the brand is you need consistency across all channels. And so, and Amazon is a price follower, but they're becoming a price leader and they want that position back of being a place where consumers go to get the best possible price. But retail has to compete with that one-on-one. They can't, they have such, their traffic is reduced.
Right.
People are coming into stores now to look for a curated solution, right? A curated offering, not 20,000 pages in one category as you do kind of digital shopping. And so they have to be able to match Amazon to make sure that they're capturing and converting that traffic. And so right. they match your price. But at the same time, they need a margin requirement there too, because you're paying for shelf space. Basically, right. they're looking at that peg slot and saying, how much is that going to cost me? How much does that turn in my square footage of my store? And we're now seeing retailers charge back. You're getting hit on Amazon from a third party seller that you're trying to price compete with, right? Then you're also going to get hit from retail, because retail has right. to compete with Amazon, and they're going to come back to you with a chargeback on a margin that's already steeper than right. it was on Amazon, right?
Right. So we spoke a little bit in the first case about this counterfeit product. Yeah. In another instance, recently, I had a wholesale company reach out to me and send me, here's a list of 15 brands that we can get you inventory if you want to sell these products on Amazon. And I said to them, how are you getting the stock? Or we're buying it from a distributor.
Sure.
And so they're getting legitimate inventory. Let's assume I were to buy that and I were to send it into Amazon. And now I have legitimate, not counterfeit inventory. And I'm selling on the listing, and I'm selling at a lower price than the brand. I'm just trying to make
with the buy box that you just purchased.
Yeah, win the buy box and just turn the volume as fast as I can at the most amount of win the buy box. So, what are the things that brands can do in those cases? Because in one sense, it's legitimate inventory. On the other hand, this is not what you intended when you sold to the distributor, right? And
that's
for them to sell to somebody that was going to compete with you on Amazon.
Right. It's in that scenario, we would call you like an unknowing bad actor. Like you didn't realize that what you were doing by reselling these goods was something that the brand had not authorized necessarily. You're assuming right. came from their legit distributor, came from their legit wholesaler. Therefore, I should be able right. or it's okay for me to sell X, Y, and Z product. For the brand specifically, monitoring, and this is something we do for some of our brands, but basically monitoring your sell-in reports and your sell-through reports is pretty critical, because what you might get and what we've seen happen more and more frequently, resellers that were previously authorized or are still authorized for that matter, aren't moving through as much inventory because traffic is down. And that is the way of the new world. Right. Retail will absolutely survive, but traffic is down. And so they may be sitting on inventory that they didn't think that they would be sitting on, and they need to move it,
right?
Right. It trickles downhill. And the conversation doesn't necessarily come to shutting down that retailer, but what are your terms? What are your pass-through terms as a brand? Take ownership that if you have no returns and you're selling inventory to a retailer or to a distribution partner, what are they supposed to do when the stock's not moving through? Because everyone's in business to make money,
right? Right?
That's why we're here, hopefully, right? Or you're not going to be in business for long. And so we're all in business to make money. If you're selling inventory and have a no return policy, what are you anticipating they're going to do when the stock doesn't sell the way that
especially
it should sell?
You know, especially when you have like food or supplements that have an expiration date around it.
That's right.
Right.
And so you've got to have those terms built in, and it's a conversation with the wholesaler. It's frankly a conversation with you as the unknown actor. And that we have those conversations a lot. We'll pick up the phone. They're like, wait, we bought this from a legitimate distributor. Hey, do you have time to talk? What right. is your business model? What is it that you purchased? Can we trace this back to what happened with the original wholesaler? Is it because you ran out because you were stuck with inventory with an expiration date? Or stuck with it and you didn't have return rights? Is this at the fault of the brand's fundamental contract that they have set up where they're setting themselves up for this mm-hmm. problem in the future? Or is it a problem where the wholesaler needed to move it and this was just genuine, I've got to get this out.
Right.
I've got to turn stock. Or yeah, they're setting up another resale site and then you've got a bad actor. We don't know, right? That's the kind of the digging, right? And you've got a couple of different options there.
And in this case, the company that approached me said to me, yeah, here's the price list, here's the brand. And when you order, we need about 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. So in my opinion, they were not placing the order from the distributor until I placed an order, right? So I don't think anybody in this case was sitting on goods. This was just, they had a distributor that was willing to sell to them.
Right. And
they were, as soon as they got orders, they didn't have inventory sitting on the line. And the distributor maybe didn't, right? And they were placing an order when they got the order. It's just, and then you're trying to figure out who's the one that's actually selling, right? Who, which distributor or who are they selling to? And how is it actually getting into the hands of this reseller on Amazon?
That's right. Well, I think, so what we do with quite a few is our brands, we audit distribution reports. And this isn't, you know, the distributor is doing their very best to move goods in and out, to have a huge portfolio of retailers and resellers and wholesalers. But some of these wholesalers also come in under false pretenses. So if you sign a contract and you're like, hey, we've got a store and you do have a storefront, but actually it only does 10% of your business, 90% is done on Amazon by selling to other resellers or even drop shipping for that matter. Right. Some of these guys don't even hold stock. We basically will go through and we actually will identify if this is a legitimate storefront. What is their majority of their business? Do they drop ship? Do they not? And I think as someone who's buying some of that inventory, a great conversation would be to truly go back to the brand and say, I'm getting an offer for this. I'd love to work with you guys. Can I buy it direct? You might actually get better pricing going direct because what you're talking about is going through two other hands through distribution anyway,
right?
Or, hey, can I work directly with your distributor? Not this other wholesaler necessarily. So I think but it really does come down to the level of attention that a brand can support. Thorncrest was founded, my two partners, we came from within a brand. And that's why we're doing what we do today. We were within a brand that was small. It was an 8-figure brand. I say small, that's not necessarily small, but then sold for 9 figures a few years later. So we saw this huge scale of growth. At some point, we actually had to shut Amazon down when it was in the multi-millions because the amount of counterfeits, and this was 10 years ago, counterfeits was more prevalent, although it's still very prevalent today, but we were seeing it as basically the number one issue. Today, we're seeing it as almost number two. We're seeing more bad actor activity as the number one, people getting inventory that don't have authorization to sell it and reselling it. But so we had to shut Amazon down because 20% of our returns were counterfeit and we were replacing them for free and it was a $100 product. Holy smokes. That takes a huge hit to your bottom line, right? Since then, every brand that I have been inside of and worked with has had the exact same problem. It's not you, and everyone kind of sits in this conference room and you all know that there's something going on, right? Amazon sales are starting to dip. VPs, what's going on with the Amazon sales? Maybe it's ad spend. We've been losing the buy box more lately. And so now we're having to drop our price. Wait, why are you losing buy? Well, we're having to chase these third-party sellers. How do they have the stock? Then someone turns to the salesperson at the wholesale level. Why do they have the inventory? I don't know. I've been trying to meet my quota numbers. We order too much in. Someone goes to the demand planner. Everyone's sitting around. Then you look at the general counsel and he's, I'm doing 18 contracts right now. I'm certainly enforcing our trademark, but I'm not chasing John Smith shop on Amazon, right? I'm going for the big fish. And everyone sits around pointing, you do it, you do a little bit of this, you do a little bit of this. And then you walk out of there with no real cohesive solution because everyone has their own job to do, like their own directive, right? Demand planner orders to forecast sales, tries to grow revenue, and policing is a challenge in e-commerce when it evolves monthly. Orderly, right? So it's really what we always, for a brand new brands that come in with preventative, by far our favorite, because we go in, we like, okay, let's take a look at your contracts. Let's, before you start going big, let's go look at the foundation and make sure that you're setting yourself up for success. And some of these distributors try to railroad smaller brands because they've got to protect their credit line, and brands don't always make it. We know that, right? We will hope for the best always, but they've basically got to, so they put in super strict terms that in the end may not be mutually beneficial for the partnership. So it's really, that's certainly where we can be the biggest impact, is at the beginning stages. But working with larger brands that are having major issues, there's a lot of cleanup to do. And in the end, it absolutely helps to be, that cleanup usually prevents future problems. But it's faceted. So like, brand protection is so broad sweeping. When you asked me early on, okay, trademark and IP protection, I've called up what I thought was a bad actor and have said, what, you've got 500 units. Like, how do you have so much inventory of this? You're not an authorized reseller. What is your business model? And they're like, Amazon's actually not that big. We own a chain of 500 retail stores. Wait a minute. But would this brand fit in your retail stores? And in my head, I'm thinking, no, not really. Right. What's his answer? And he's, no, not really, but I got a pretty good deal on it. And I'm like, okay, but if you stopped selling this brand on Amazon specifically, sold it on your own site, I could probably introduce you to a brand that's very interested in the 500 stores that you just talked to me about, because they're growing omni-channel and they're absolutely ripe for your type of business.
Right.
And that was a huge win, right? That wasn't a bad actor. That was a guy who got inventory, was trying to move it, but actually has a very legitimate business elsewhere. And that was just about connecting people.
Right. That makes sense. And that's a great, I guess, advantage you have in terms of working with multiple brands and talking to these resellers. And I think it's a good to point out, instead of starting when you see a reseller with maybe a very threatening kind of message, which maybe half will ignore, half maybe will do something about, but maybe first just try to reach out to them and talk to them and ask some questions. You can find out who sold to them and figure out maybe how to amicably solve the issue. Okay, we'll let you sell for a few hundred units. We won't take any action if you sign something not to continue to sell our brand or whatever, right? Trying to find those strategies. But so what do you do in that case? Are there things you can do, brands can do, with having certain warranties in place or certain things that maybe only the brand can provide that would allow you to manage, let's say, somebody has legitimate stock, but maybe got it from liquidation, our retail stores, or a distributor that is not an authorized seller, that you could put some things in place within the brand that says, okay, this person cannot honor warranty or certain things that would allow you to legitimately say they can't sell the product on Amazon, for example?
Yeah, I think the biggest one that we always recommend is having an authorized reseller agreement with criteria in place. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we work with our brands on. If they already have one in place, we typically will take a look at it and either strengthen language or add criteria to it. And honestly, like you had said, rather than going out and assuming everyone's a bad actor, which, to be frank, that's the easiest way to weed out the noise.
Right.
Is there are some people that are out there that, like I said, have 500 units. They're not going to jump off Amazon just because we sent them an email. They have 500 units. Like, they need to move the inventory.
Right.
But I think having an authorized reseller agreement in place with criteria then also allows that reseller to become a legitimate partner and increase that business. And I think for any brand that's out there, doing it, you know, digitally is probably the easiest way to do it, have a pretty standard form, and then sending that out as a link. Hey, if you're interested in becoming a seller, this is what you need to complete. We will evaluate it. We will revert back to you and determine if you meet the criteria that we've set in place. But setting up those boundaries, ethos internally too, right? With your entire sales organization, saying this is how we're going to vet. That means we might say no more than we may say yes, or we're 50-50 or whatever that looks like, but we need to stay true to it. Because once you start getting sellers under your listing, you're going to get more. Like, it doesn't stop with just one or two, because then all of a sudden it's like open season. If that guy's doing it, then I can do it. If he's doing it, then I'll drop my price. And you end up in this basically price degradation, but also a messy marketplace where consumers are like, which one do I buy? I mean, they normally just go for the buy box, but how do you know that is an inventory that's been sitting or that was from a legitimate wholesaler?
Yeah, definitely when I buy and it's a third party seller, I always click on the seller name to see the feedback. But I don't know if that's the behavior, right? Of a shop is not in the, is not in the.
Yeah, I really don't think it is because right. When I talk to, they're like, what do you mean? Of course I bought it from the brand. Actually, you didn't. And even I went in and I actually, but I'm an advanced shopper like you are. And I also know the big problems, right? I went in to buy my daughter some shoes on Amazon. I couldn't even find the brand. I was going, scrolling at some point. I was like, okay, I'm going to pop off here and I'm going to go to a retail store and try and find them there because basically I can't, I don't know who's who. There's discounts. And although it's intriguing, I don't know that I trust it necessarily, but I could tell you my friends have no idea that normal person shopping thinks that that's the brand.
And when you ask somebody, who'd you buy it from? They say, oh, I bought it on Amazon. They don't.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I bought it from Amazon and it's whatever brand. And I bought it on Amazon. They don't know that it was from a seller who is from another seller. You've got sometimes in grocery and you'll get reviews that are like, this was, these don't taste good. They taste chalky. Their quality's gone down. You're like, you may have just bought from someone who had inventory that's changed hands so many times that it was expired goods.
Right. Or not stored properly.
Or not stored in a like climate controlled warehouse, right? Supplements get that a lot.
Right. Yeah. Especially I've seen like on like gummy supplements and
melted.
And things like that. Yes. Do you also put protections in place overseas, let's say getting trademarks, let's say in China or countries that you're manufacturing in so that they can't get the product out?
Yeah.
If there's a trademark.
Yeah, we do. So we would highly recommend. So we do trademarks in Europe. We do them in Asia and then here locally too, and can absolutely help brands with that. But we always recommend for brands manufacturing in China to get a trademark in China too, especially as they grow, the brand grows. We have experienced this firsthand. We've had many brands experience this firsthand where they basically are being ransomed. Their trademark is ransomed. So if they didn't have it in China, someone in Asia purchases it, their trademark, and then stops the good at customs. And basically you can't get your product out. And that's not unique to China. That's unique to anywhere where they're manufacturing your goods if you don't have the trademark in that country. And they stop it and they seize it. And basically, you have no supply until you buy back your trademark from that company. And that can be very pricey. The bigger you are, the more expensive they're going to hold it. But more often than not, you're high six figures for buying that trademark back because they've leveraged your goods.
So definitely get a trademark in the country you're manufacturing. At which point should a brand, let's say, be talking to a company like Thorncrest or be approaching you? Starting up and your plan is to be in retail. If you're starting up and your plan is to be just let's say, D2C and Amazon, like when should brands consider, okay, we should have some kind of strategy in place? And like you said, easier to deal with it proactively in your agreements and your setting things up.
I'd say when they're looking to go into retail or other e-commerce platforms. And the reason is because you're then opening up your product to be purchased by other individuals who could potentially resell it because they have a store visa, they've got coupons, they've got basically retail arbitrage is very real and is a huge issue. But so if you can get ahead of that, and when you go into retail, when you sign with distribution, if you're able to pull, and we do ad hoc work all the time. We even do acting GC for smaller brands that are looking to go into retail to review contracts or to draft contracts or to draft authorized resale agreements. But basically, if you can come in early, and we can say, hey, let's take a look at your contracts. Let's add this language, this link from a brand protection standpoint specifically. And then you go quiet, you go off on your own, you start building it. We'd say the moment you get into a medium mid box is when you should be saying, hey, if Amazon is still a priority for you.
Right.
And that mid-box is, if this isn't something you're just, you're so very slowly going after, I'd say call. And that's when we would basically put you on a preventative program. And that way we can set the foundation super early, right? You communicate with your mid-box, you keep your Amazon clean, you go into big box, because the moment you go into big box and you have these problems, it is whack-a-mole. And brand protection is not something that goes away. It is something that is a constant. But if you don't have 20 resellers or 6 resellers, you only have one, it's a lot easier to say that they're coming down than to say, wait, you've got a handful. And for your retailer to say, I can't compete. Or, hey, that is my new MSRP and I want 50% margin off of this MSRP because that's who I'm competing with. That chokes you out, right? That's not worth it at some point. And so I'd say that would be, that's the place where if we had our golden ticket come before you get into major retail and before you sign a major distribution partner, because we could set up hold and then turn back on when the time is right. But it's going to help both your retailers, obviously, and your Amazon business. But at the end right. of the day, our goal is to make sure the brand is profitable, the most profitable right. they can be, because you're already giving up a lot when you're on Amazon and in retail.
And would you advise brands at that point to try to create a different, somewhat of a slightly different SKU for retail versus Amazon? I know that may be challenging at times, but
yeah, it's in, if you can manage the SKU count, excellent. But don't just create a different SKU number, because your product will still be compared. There has to be something, some differentiator that you're presenting online, physical differentiator, not just a sleeve that you're presenting online or in store, that is different so that you don't end up with a potential price comparison issue.
Right. So would so for example, I'm selling a can of soda, would if I sell a 12-ounce versus a 16-ounce or something, create a SKU, is that enough where then it won't be compared in a sense? It may not be practical to necessarily do that.
We've got some brands that have done that because the problem, honestly, the problem got so big, they basically had to go back to the drawing board and do that. And yes, I'd say absolutely. If you have the resources to manage SKU counts, like that is an excellent way to do it. I think that becomes incredibly tricky in the soft goods space and clothing, in shoes, right? Because doing two sets of size 5 through size 11 is a crazy SKU count conversation, right?
Right.
I think it's a lot easier with goods that don't have as many variations or child products.
In thinking about it, there are, I think, things you could do, but if you included a bonus shoehorn or something online, but
that's right.
Yeah, but it can see it getting complex, especially when you have a lot of SKUs like in clothing or something.
It just depends on your resources, right? Yeah, I think at the end of the day. But yeah, that's an excellent way. Serial number tracking is another way that's great. Mm-hmm. Where you could manage batch numbers and track them back. That's a huge plus for any brand, but as long as it's tracked all the way through, because just applying a serial number and then letting it out into the wild doesn't let you track it back. It's a poor use of it, right?
Yeah. And so I guess speaking of which, on the serial number side, do you recommend the Amazon transparency program?
I do. Yeah, I would. In general, I would recommend it. We see less problems when brands are in transparency. It's not zero, but we see less. We see inherently less. And so I absolutely would say yes. I think there is a fundamental flaw with that program, which is just that you have to put the number, the transparency on every product you manufacture. So you're still going to get third-party sellers then that are buying legitimate product that are then selling it in, and it's still going to code properly. But we do find less.
Amazon, in a sense, wants to deter the counterfeit, but they want that. Amazon, in a sense, wants those resellers, right? Because they bring
the price. That's the whole marketplace.
They bring the price
whole marketplace. That's right. And that's their marketplace model, right? Is to support more, the more resellers, the better. So the transparency program helps against counterfeits. It doesn't, I'd say it is slightly helpful against additional resellers popping up on your ASINs. We do find less resellers for people who have transparency. Why? I'm not totally sure. It could
maybe
just be
concerned.
It could just be perception. I'm not totally sure, but we do find less resellers for people who have transparency. It doesn't solve that problem, but it certainly helps with counterfeit.
Right. Or maybe there are just companies that are more concerned about brand protection in the first place, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's usually companies that have been burned.
Exactly. And I think that's why you'll never see Amazon, because Amazon could easily turn something on in brand registry. Who are the approved reseller names, right, that are allowed to sell? But Amazon will likely never turn that on because it's to their benefit to drive price down and competition and let you figure out kind of
the
problem, right?
Open marketplace. That's the whole, it's an open marketplace and it's for anybody and everybody. And so it's not in their best interest to prevent other sellers from joining brands that are selling very well.
Right.
That's usually what the issue pops up, not when you're a little, when you're baby brand.
Right.
The issue pops up when you start getting into kind of that teenager and adult life.
Right.
And you're getting into the millions and you're climbing rankings and things are starting to work really well for you. And then you've got sellers pop up and Amazon doesn't want to stop that traffic. That's where their money's coming from.
Right, exactly. And how they drive pricing down and, you know.
Well, they've got to be competitive, right? They're
right.
price leaders. They're supposed to be the most competitive in the market. That's why you go to Amazon, you research a product. That's why when you're in a store, whatever store it may be, and it's a brand you're not familiar with, and you go to Amazon first to check out the reviews.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, if you see it's cheaper, Amazon just stole that retailer's traffic immediately.
Oh, yeah. Especially when I can get it in my house the next morning or that
day. That's right. Or a couple hours later.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not spending another $5 for it in retail. I'd rather just have it delivered to my house. And honestly, the biggest issue there is, did I go just for that product? Because if so, they might have just lost a basket spend, right? If I went just for one product and then I went and I was going to add three or four other things and all of a sudden I'm on Amazon, I'm like, shoot, might as well just, if I'm already getting a delivery,
not waiting online.
I may as well just add those things to my Amazon delivery. And
right.
walk right out that door of that retail store. That's the biggest issue, right? That's why retailers have to compete with Amazon in a sense that they curate the solution, but pricing wise.
Yeah.
So.
I'll do the same often with a supplement where for the most part, it's usually higher priced like at Whole Foods versus Amazon.
Sure.
I will check the reviews. I'll probably buy my first. I'll say, okay, I'm here. I'll pay the extra $5 or $10, but then the next order I'm placing on
Amazon. Right.
Which is also the advantage for brands to be there. It's a little bit of a showroom for your products.
It's funny. We always say, even for brands that are just starting out, it's okay. We've got our D2C site. Amazon, for a lot of companies, a love hate.
Right.
It's right. You absolutely love it for the visibility, for the reviews, for basically being a product research engine.
Right.
And that you can purchase on because of the volatility of what it does for the rest of the channel, because it's so widely used. But brands who are just D2C, do we even do Amazon? Yes, you do. Like that, we as a brand protection agency, we would still say, yes, it might cause you headaches, but it's going to grow your brand. You just have to take the good with the bad and manage it. Don't ignore it. Don't think it's not gonna happen. Just be hyper aware. This is going to happen. Build this into my model. Let's move forward.
Right.
And then you get retail, which is channel visibility. If you've made it into retail and you're on the shelf, that's incredible for branding, because Amazon's not really giving you branding. They're just giving you options to buy.
Right.
And maybe some sponsored ads. But like at the end of the day, you're paying for that. So
absolutely. Great. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this. I don't hear a lot of talk about brand protection. What are the best ways for people to get in touch, have a conversation, see if Thorncrest can help solve some of their challenges, or like you said, prevent challenges in the future, even better?
Yeah. It's funny. You said you don't hear a lot about brand protection. It's not something people really like to discuss openly. Mm-hmm. It's fair. We're talking about some problems that you might have with your brand. So a lot of our customers are organic and referrals. And so thank you for that. And that for us means that we're doing a good job and that we need to keep doing a good job, especially if that's how we're mostly building our brand. But so getting in touch with us, it's a simple message. They could contact me and just say, hey, I have a couple quick questions. I'll do a discovery call and just say, what's going on, right? Is it something that we can help with? Is it something that we would refer to somebody else? Or is it something we don't manage and do? But at the end of the day, an easy 15-minute phone call is probably the best way to just figure out if, and we've had many calls where if you really don't have an issue, do a couple of these things and you'll be fine. And that's perfect. Frankly, we hope we never talk to you again. Not that we don't want to talk to you, but we don't want brands to have problems, right? We want them to be successful, but oftentimes it could be either too early or it may be worth getting involved now and chatting to us now because you have a little bit of an issue. And depending on where your brand is going from a growth perspective, we would probably say, A, you're going into a certain channel that tends to be a little messy and you're going to have more problems. Or B, actually, it's pretty tight. You might not have any issues at all. Let's do a one pop, get your foundation ready and call us later if you would like to. But I'd say the easiest is just a quick phone call or a message.
Great. Okay, excellent. Yeah. You can go to thorn-crest.com. I'll also put your LinkedIn and your email, if it's okay, in the show notes.
So yes, please.
People can get in touch with you. And I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing more how brands can help protect their IP across distribution.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you taking the time and for the thoughtful questions.
Thank you.
And I'll chat with you later. Take care.